So the sheet in front of us is a sheet with the eight, with the 15 units in the Parsha of Shamos. The reason that I gave out this sheet is because when we look at a Parsha, the Parsha looks a little bit overwhelming. Is there a way, some people want to know, to make it not overwhelming and to cut it down into pieces so that we can learn from the pieces something that we find interesting? So today, there happens to be a sefer that this information comes from. I did not write the units. If you want to know what that is, I'll be happy to share it with you. And it's just a way of looking at a parsha as a whole bunch of trees that are units as opposed to one big piece of pie. Let's talk today about what we consider to be our definition of fear of heaven. And if you'd like, just share with us, what do you consider to be fear of heaven? What does it mean to you? What's interesting about it? What's challenging about it? Thank you. If you want to share something, you're welcome to share. You don't have to. But if something comes to mind that we might all benefit from.
What's the question? Fear of heaven, or is that?
Yiras Shomayim. Fear of heaven. What does it mean? What does it look like?
I guess there's two levels of it, right? One level is like onish.
There's no right or wrong. We're just hearing what you have to say.
Onish, and then the other one is like I'm in such a state of awe that I can't even, like, just to contemplate the greatness of Hashem that I just can't even. I'm just in awe.
So you said two things. You said a fear of punishment, yeah. And you said an awe. Okay. We do mitzvahs because of the fact that we fear Hashem.
Well, one of the reasons.
I'm just asking a question kind of to get us thinking and to see what people think. I don't have the monopoly on today's wisdom. I'm just kind of guiding it. So in the unit about the midwives, that's unit 3. We have a very, very fascinating interchange that happens between the king of Mitzrayim and these two ladies. So let's look at it and see what happens based on the initial reading and see if our revered commentaries can give us any insight. And then let us see if we can draw out any personal lessons about Yirat Shamayim, fear of heaven. So we are on page 294, where there is a conversation. And it starts sentence 15, Tesvav. Yomer Melech Mitzrayim Lamiyaldos Ivrios. The king of Mitzrayim said to the midwives who serviced the Jewish women, Asher Shem Ha'achas Shifra V'Shem Ha'Shenis Pua. So Rashi tells us that they were actually Miriam and Yocheved, the mother and sister of Paro.
Of Moshe.
So right here we see it's kind of interesting. I think it's the Malbim who says, we'll open it up here in a second. And Paro did not know that these were Jewish women. Now, the Malbim looks at the word Vayomer, and he wants to know why a king uses the word Vayomer, he said. And the Malbim says, and I just brought a picture of the Malbim so that we know who we were talking about. The Malbim lived from 1809 to 1879, just to get a picture of who we're talking about. So we're not talking about somebody a million years ago. He died in 1879. There's a book about biographies, and that's his picture. If you want to know where beards come from, it's kind of, I kind of where it comes from. Just, it makes it a little bit more alive. His name was Rabbi Meir Leib ben Yechiel, and the Malbim is the acronym of his name. So the Malbim sees in the word Vayomer a suggestion. He was not ready to announce genocide like Hitler was. He was keeping it on the hush. He did not know that these were Jewish women. And he said, on the hush, take care of the boys so that the woman who's giving birth doesn't know. That's what the Malbim sees in the word Vayomer, because a king would normally use a word that is a commandment. Vayitzav, he commanded. But since the Torah uses the word Vayomer, he said, it's, the Malbim says, like a suggestion. You and I also speak in Amirot. Those are conversational words. So this was a conversation between the king and these two ladies, says the Malbim. And he said, let's keep it quiet. I want to kill the Jewish boys. Let's not make a big deal. So this is how to do it. When the lady's not looking, you just kill the baby.
We have the Hashem, which is Vayomer Hashem, and Moshe Lamor. You know, we use Vayomer there, and that's a command, so I have a question.
So, okay, so you want to know, how does the Malbim see that?
Right, because we have it all the time. Vayomer.
Okay, excellent question. Who wants to take Drew's question?
Yeah, but it starts out always Vayomer Hashem, and Moshe Lamor. It starts out always Vayomer.
So is it possible that in the context of God speaking to Moshe, we know it's not a suggestion? The chapter of Tzitzis that we said this morning told us, began with the word Vayomer. Now that's not a suggestion. Okay, so again, what does it say? Just like you said, Rabbi, it goes from Vayomer, open the conversation, to Daber B'nai Yisrael, tell the Jewish people to wear Tzitzis. So the opener is the Amar, the casual, switches to Daber. So here, there is no switch. Now, the reason the Malbim proves it is because in sentence 22, Chav Beis, at the end of the discussion, he says to the Jewish, to all of his people, Vayitzav paro l'chol amo lemor. He commands them, every child has to be sent into the Nile River. That's not a suggestion. That's a tzivui. Explains the Malbim that since the suggestion didn't work because these ladies messed up the plan, now he went into full mode and he said, okay, we're killing all the kids. That's what the Malbim sees in the change in the words between Vayomer and Vayitzav. And what we're going to talk about today and try to take away something significant for ourselves is, what did these ladies do? What were they up against that made it possible for them to stand up against the king of Mitzrayim, the most powerful person in the world at the time? And these two ladies said, we're not listening. What was it? What did they have in their makeup, in their constitution? What was their Yirah Shamayim looking like that they could stand up against the king? I mean, imagine any of us, the President of the United States tells us to do something. You like him, you don't like him. He's the President of the United States. In the end of the day, he's the President of the United States.
I was just going to say the same thing as Avraham Avinu when Nebuchadnezzar told him to bow down him, and he said, I'll throw you in the fire. Go ahead, throw me in the fire. Never.
Okay, so character against a perceived powerful situation. So let's see if we can bring this down a little bit just for ourselves. But let's see if we have a minute just to read the rest of the Chumash to see what it says there. Okay. So we did the first and the last. The other point that I just wanted to raise over here is that when we see the conversation, do we see the hand of Hashem in the fact that, first of all, the king himself is dealing with this situation? we think of a king as to be kind of busy doing things, and here he himself is telling these ladies to take care of those, to take care of those little boys. So does that say that there's a hand of Hashem here at work? He doesn't know who he's talking to. He's talking to two of the most significant prophetesses that Jewish people had. One of them is responsible for the birth of Moshe. Told her father, you should get back with your mother, with my mother. You shouldn't stay separate. That's like Rabbi Kamenetsky speaking to a 9-year-old. The opinion that says that she was 9 years old, it's Rabbi Kamenetsky, the Gadol Hador, listening to a 9-year-old what he should do. And he listens. So this story is not just a simple story. There's a lot going on there. Okay, so let's just continue and see what happened.
An interesting point that you raise is that the king didn't know or realize that these were Jewish women. Just like Esther, the king did not realize that Esther was Jewish.
He didn't know. With all of his abilities, and the Ramban actually says, the Ramban differs with the Malbim a little bit. The Ramban says that this last commandment to send to throw all the Egyptian babies was that there was a reward. If you find the baby, go search the houses of the Jews. If you find the baby, you're going to get a reward. So he had, and people were afraid. So there was a KGB. So how did he not know who he was talking to? Just to underline and exclamation your point, he didn't know who he was talking to. The most powerful person in the KGB state didn't know he was talking at the two of the most prominent Jewish women at the time. Like Ahasuerus didn't know about Esther. Excellent point. Okay. So I guess the idea is that part of an exercise in the Torah study is academic, but the other part is that the dripping from the academic makes us feel more connected and ultimately has an effect on our connection to Hashem, and then, if reinforced properly, on our Yirat Shamayim, because Torah is the mystical smoke. Okay, let's call it incense, for lack of a better word, that kind of makes us connected. We can sing and we can dance, which does have effect. A Torah study is the thing that brings it into our hearts, and then ultimately reinforces Yirat Shamayim. Okay, let's continue with the conversation because we don't want to run over time. Okay, so Vayomer, again, okay, Tezayin, 16. So, B'yaledchen eso ivrios, when the Jewish women give birth, urisem al havnoim, look on the birthing stool, im bein hu vahamiten oto, if it's a boy, if it's a male, kill him. If it's a girl, so let her live. So what does it say? Continue. Yud Zayin, Batirena Hamialdos Es Elokim. They feared Hashem. Okay, Yirat Shamayim. The Loasu Kasher Dibar Lehem Melech Mitzrayim. Now, from the Pasuk, it's apparent not only did they not kill them, but look at the last three words, Vatichayena Es Hayilodim, says Rashi. They kept them alive. So I think it's the Ramban who says that they went around to the houses of the wealthy people and they made sure to get food to take care of these families, to take care of these kids. So now he calls them in and he says, Maduasi said Hadavar Hazeh, why are you doing this? You're keeping these children alive. And notice what he said. He didn't say you're not killing them. He says you're keeping them alive. So he knew what was happening. Now, the Marsha wants to know about this answer because the answer does not match the question. He asked, why don't you kill them? So the answer, well, Vatomar Nahamiyaldos El Paro. They don't need us. They don't need us. What was the question? Why are you doing this? So they answered, well, they don't need us. And Rashi explains in the next words, Kilocha Noshim Hamitzios Urios. They're not like the Egyptian women. Kichayos Hena, and Rashi explains that they're like animals, so to speak. They're independent. They're like animals in the field. He wasn't calling them animals. He was saying that they're independent. Just like the animals are independent, so too the Jewish women are independent. B'terem tavo alehim hamil dos v'yaladu. So before we come, the child's born. Yes.
One thing I see from this is why he didn't realize that they were Jewish women is they were doing it for both Egyptian women and Jewish women.
Oh, really?
Like, they weren't specialists. I only serviced Jewish women. They serviced everybody, all the women.
How do you know that?
Because they said Jewish women or Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women. But how do they know what the Egyptian women are like?
Well, that's not a bad diuk. That's not a bad diuk. Now, it could be a statement of fact. Paro was assuming, well, you're going to go service them. So they're saying, well, you know, you're asking us to service them. They're not like the Egyptians. What the people here are saying is, it is a possible diuk. It's a possible inference. Let's see if we can back it up. But it is a very, very intelligent. It is not, but it is a very intelligent inference. But we don't have a proof yet that they actually dealt with them. We have a proof that they saw the difference. We don't have a proof yet that they dealt with them.
We have a proof that they're not killing the Egyptian babies yet. The ones laid on the bed. I think Rashi brings up that was the command to kill everything.
So at this point, it's still just the Jewish. The Jewish boys. Now, the Ramban says at this point, he really wanted to do something to them. Paro really wanted to do something to them, but he wasn't able to. But the Torah testifies again, Yerushalmai, Vayhi ki yoru hamiyaldos es elokim, v'aslehem botim, he made them houses, he made them houses of kahuna, that from them would descend the Kohanim and the Levim, and that's what it means, houses. And then the last pasuk, which we did, now the edict is for everybody. Okay, so we discussed the Malbim. Now let's see what the Ramban has to say. I found the picture of the Ramban. Anybody who's interested?
Ramban?
Yes, this is the Ramban. The Ramban lived from 1195 to 1270.
The Ramban.
The Ramban. Nachmanides. Okay? Interesting, just to see what he looks like. Okay, so the Ramban inserts this as part of a whole discussion as to what was taking place here. The plan, the final solution, so to speak. So the final solution included to tell the midwives privately that what they should do so that the women would not know that they were being killed. And then he said, to his whole nation, because he didn't want to have a whole situation where there would be murders and it would be messy and there would be knives and guns, etc. So this was a little bit cleaner. He did tell the people, says the Ramban, that if they would find the baby. That they should throw him into the water, and if the father would scream, so they should bring up charges about him. Where do you think communism got their ideas? If the parents complain, trump them up on charges. He says here, Yovi Aidim v'yase bo nekava. So we're not gonna allow the Jewish dads to stand up for their kids. And when this commandment of the king was made, so Mitzrim, Egyptians, used to go to the houses at night and try to find the babies who were being hidden. That's why it says, related to Moshe, they couldn't hide them anymore because your neighbors came to find you. Now, just think about this whole society, right? So the king commands to throw a child into water to drown a child. So we know that even our secular society is concerned for animals, is concerned for children. What does it say about a society that runs to do what the king said, to throw babies into the to drown babies? It says about society. And they just, they just did it. Now, you may hate the Jews, you have to hate this little baby. What does this little baby do to you?
There's a big problem, though, right after he commands Mitzrayim, throw him in there. You think there'd be a revolution? I mean, you know, what's first of all, why would he take a chance and do something like that? Second, why was it successful? Three, why was there a revolution at that point? You know, you're asking us to kill all the boys? This is the, you know.
There was not a revolution. So it shows us what type of society we were involved with. And it shows us how when people do not have Yirat Shamayim, there are no rules. Is he a god? He was a god. A human guy. I mean, just imagine today, you know, with all the groups today, you know, child welfare, etc. It has nothing to do with religion. You take care of kids. Right? How much money put into Connecticut after those kids, unfortunately, were massacred? What did they say? You know, 2 weeks ago, there was a mall shooting. Yeah, people were upset. Children. I have a personal concern about that. People are people, whether they're 6 or they're 60. A person got murdered, cut down. Who are we to say, because it was a child? Okay. But that's a different story. So the point is that that's the illustration of the society. So Rav Silverstein, who is like the Rabbi Kamenetsky of Israel, is a man in his mid-70s, is a very prolific writer. He speaks about this in terms of our understanding things that happen to us. First, in terms of just general things. Could the midwives have said, listen, you know, we were commanded. He's the king. He's the KGB. You know, we don't want to do it. But we have to do it. Could they have said, well, what are we going to do? That's the time we're living in. The Ramban, I think, or maybe the Malbim, says that if a child actually was dead, they would do CPR on the child. So they went above and beyond because they didn't lose their compass. Their Yirat Shamayim was a compass during a tough time. Yes, the king is telling me what to do, and I'm still not going to do it because I'm going to answer to the higher authority. So Zilverstein brings it into tough times, and he tells a really interesting story. Zilverstein is a speaker in different cities. He lives in Bnei Brak, but he also has a center in Cholon, which is not known for its Torah scholarship. He goes to give a class in Cholon, and he's driving. He takes taxis, so he's in a taxi on the way home from one of his classes, and there's a driver behind the taxi trying to cut them off. So they stopped. Couldn't imagine what it was. It wasn't road rage, because the guy didn't pass them. He tried to cut them off to stop them. So the driver who was trying to cut them off runs out of the car, and Rav Silverstein rolls his window down. He said, "Yeah, what's the problem?" He said, "I had to catch you." Listen to what he said. "I just won a big lottery prize. I know myself. If I don't give out the tzedakah now, I won't give it out. I want to talk to you about how I should give out the tzedakah." So we see that there are people who do things with integrity. Now, I'm not telling you that you should cut people off in the car. Okay? And maybe that was a little out of the box. Maybe you could have waited out of his house. But you see that a person is inspired to do the right thing. That's also Yirat Shamayim. Yirat Shamayim is not just the fear part. It's doing the right thing. How do we do the right thing? Now, is doing the right thing under pressure, like these ladies did, and that's why they were zocha to get Kohanim and Levim to come from their families, because their actions were so sterling that that's who the Kohen and the Levi needs to be. Who is the person who's going to serve, who's going to give my sacrifice at the temple? A person who comes from that type of giving themselves to others and Yirah Shemayim. I am afraid of only Hashem. I am not going to do the wrong thing. We're faced with tough situations. He brings the situation of people caring for somebody who's sick, and we can get by. The Mialdos, he says, could have gotten by. They could have said, we'll get by. The king said? The president said? Now, we certainly cannot judge anybody who went through the Holocaust, but we know stories of the Holocaust of people who went above and beyond for somebody else. We do not judge those who don't, because we don't know what we would have done in those situations, and we cannot judge anybody who didn't perform the way we think they should perform. You be in their shoes for a week, and then you tell me how you're going to behave. But we see the metal, M-E-T-T-L-E, of the people who did perform, and they went above and beyond. So it's Yirah Shamayim, perhaps, but it's also their strength of character. Yirah Shamayim is the fear and the awe, and it also brings us to a new level of what is my character going to reflect. The fear is the fear. But it's the fear when nobody's watching, when I have a way out. Have we learned from these ladies that they are not going to take any shortcuts? Not only am I not going to kill the babies, I'm gonna do the opposite. I'm gonna do things to support them, to help them, to make them live better.
I like what you're saying with the character, because a person could say to Pirkei Avos, a boy cannot be a Yerushalayim. So in other words, you know, somebody's Yerushalayim has to also have great character, because if a person just has Yerushalayim without character, you know, he might not be able to, you know, I mean, yeah, because he might rationalize, I better do this because. He might be fear heaven, but he really needs character. We have the conviction.
So there's two things, right? So there's two things that bring us to the Yirah Shamayim. One is the fear. I don't want to be punished. But the other is rising to that higher human value, right? How does a fireman go into a building, know that he just might fall on him, and he may not walk out alive? So that's a calling. That's a saying, I'm going to give myself over. So I think that what he's bringing down is, this Rav Zilstein has another sefer over here that I'm holding, it's having the character. He brings the story of the Chafetz Chaim, who was driving in a wagon, and the wagon driver stopped on the side of the road to take some fruits from an orchard. They looked beautiful, and he didn't know he was carrying the Chafetz Chaim. So he said to the Chafetz Chaim, could you please look and see if anybody comes, call me, and I won't take the fruits. But the Chafetz Chaim said, there's somebody watching. So he ran to the coach. He stopped a little further, and he went to another place to take. Chafetz Chaim said, there's somebody watching. So after 2-3 times, the guy said, what are you doing to me? I want to eat the fruits. Chafetz Chaim said, yes, somebody is watching. Somebody is watching. So it's a matter of somebody's watching and raising our character. I don't take fruits that belong to somebody else, because my integrity doesn't allow me to do that. We've all heard the stories of the people who crashed in 1929, during the crash of 29, because they didn't have a fearless Congress and President to save them. So there was a crash in 29. So there was people who lost everything, and they paid everybody back. In time, paid everybody. You could go bankrupt. You could get out. But their personal integrity. So I think Rav Zilberstein is telling us that if we can take our personal integrity, we can match it to the fear, to the no, Hashem is watching. There is an overall plan as to what's happening, and we are responsible to fit into the plan. So then the story of these people saving the babies takes on a new level. What can we do? How can we go above and beyond? It's really going above and beyond. So there's fear of Hashem, and there's fear of His awesomeness, like you said before. And there is being able to say, I don't do it because it's not the right thing to do. Yes, my value system comes from the Torah. It's adding that dimension. And every one of these ideas is a glue. You know there's Gorilla Glue. You know there's something called a Gorilla Glue. It's a glue that holds things very strongly. And there's Elmer's glue, and there's little paste, and there's scotch tape. So we need every type of glue that we can have to get us to do the right thing. There is no one thing that gets us to do the right thing. It's these constant immersions, these constant dabs, and being around people who are like that. People who are like that, surrounding ourselves by people like you are today, right? You came to the Kollel. You're not at the King of Prussia Mall. Not that the King of Prussia Mall is a bad place. You're around people who are looking for self-improvement, no matter what level they are, whatever step they are. Some in English, some in Hebrew, some are big scholars, some are little scholars, but everybody's here under the umbrella. Everybody's under the umbrella. And if one takes that and says, okay, now how am I going to take the umbrella further? How am I going to look at my Yirah Shamayim, my service of Hashem, my fear of Hashem, my integrity, my doing the right thing? Doing the right thing. How do I do the right thing? Now, just to end, you know, it's something that people from our previous generation really had in a lot of ways. There were people, they just had values. They just had standards. They got it from their parents, whether they're observant or not observant. They just had, because they weren't clouded. Their messages were clear. They knew what they stood for. They knew what they stood for. Today, people aren't so clear. So in our time, the challenge is getting clear. What's important? What do we do? What's our value? Looking back to the people from our heritage. These two ladies stood up to the big king. And they were rewarded. So God should give us each day the strength to do what we need to do, to match our integrity and our scholarship and our character, so that we can be in the book too. We're in the book. We can stay in the book.
So my question is, these two have Musar, they have some greatness there, but what about Batya? Where did she learn that? Where did she become so great? I mean, she had such a rasha for her father. How did she figure it out?
Okay, so if you'd like us to talk about that tomorrow, we can. Do we agree to talk about the daughter of Paro tomorrow?
That'd be great. Yeah.
How was the daughter of Paro raised in the house of Paro? And how did she have the strength of character?
Strength of character.
Okay. So which unit is that? Is that the next one? Or that's the one before?
I wasn't even thinking about it. Wow.
Okay. All right.
That's Moshe.
That's Moshe. Yes, okay. Okay. So let's see what we can figure out about Moshe and what we can see. How does a girl rebel against her father in this manner? Wow.
Beautiful.
Powerful.
Shkala, thank you so much. Beautiful.